Before we get into today's podcast, I want to offer you a powerful free resource. Many Christians have been taught that the goal of our faith is to simply leave earth and go up to heaven. But what if that's not the full story? In his remarkable book, God's Homecoming, N.T. Wright traces the sweeping biblical promise that God is not abandoning this world, he is renewing it. From Genesis to Revelation, Scripture tells the story not of us going up to God, but of God coming down to dwell with us. We're offering you a free digital excerpt so you can explore this hope-filled vision for yourself. Download it today at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now, here's today's podcast.
C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis Podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
What you are about to hear was recorded in front of a live audience at Wycliffe Hall in Oxford, where I was joined by Professor Alistair McGrath.
Well, let's talk about truth, because that's another of the big issues that Lewis talks about, but that also we're grappling with now. And many in our society have potentially abandoned absolute truth, objective truth. Then how would Lewis respond to that notion that you mentioned earlier, if my truth, your truth, is true for me, but not necessarily true?
I think the problem that Lewis will identify is this. If we set truth to one side and simply accept popular opinions, culturalism, left-wing opinions, or the views of people who are in power, then in effect we are going to be enslaved. It's a bit like that hideous strength where he talks about conditioners, where in effect you are, in effect, being brought to a point where you buy into all these ideas, perhaps knowing they're not right, but feeling that this is the way things are going, let's go along with them, and then things go horribly wrong. I think what Lewis is saying is that truth is a defense of freedom, that really, that gospel line from John's gospel, that truth will set you free, is very, very emphasized for Lewis himself, but also what Lewis would want to say to us. If you lose sight of truth, then you are opening the gateways to being enslaved by worldviews that pretend to be true and look fashionable, but actually are profoundly enslaving and debilitating. So I think Lewis really wants to be very careful.
Yeah.
And so on what grounds then would Lewis argue for the existence of objective truth?
Well, I think he would do it basically on two main grounds. One is his argument that as you look at human history, you see ideas or values or concepts of truth begin to peak and then they die away and are abandoned because we realize they're no good. Here's his question. What happens if you just step back into the period where they were thought to be truth? Can you now see that we might be in a new period where actually there are certain very influential opinions, versions of truth, which enslave people? And think ahead, maybe in 10 years' time, we'll be saying, why on earth did anyone take that seriously? But the other thing, which is perhaps more important, is Lewis's emphasis that truth is something ultimately that's transcendent. But what I mean by that is that it is not something we say, oh, let me just make this up. It's something which we recognize, which we discern, and to which we respond. And of course, for Lewis, truth is a relational idea, not simply an intellectual idea. It's not about this idea makes sense. It's much more this vision of reality is to be trusted and trying to figure out where I fit into this. And again, that brings us straight back to the idea of meaning and significance. For Lewis, these are all interconnected. And so that's why I think it's very important to let Lewis challenge us about whether we've really grasped the depth and the richness of the Christian vision and found our own place within it.
So how then do we ascertain what's true?
Well, Lewis's argument is you check that. I mean, let's go back to the line which the warder. Do you remember the bit where the children have different experiences of Narnia, and they just can't be reconciled. So they go and find the old professor. It might be as old Lewis himself, but anyway, and they say, look, we can't work out who's telling the truth. How do we do it? And the professor makes some suggestions, like, for example, somebody's trustworthiness, the trustworthiness of a witness and so on. So what Lewis is trying to do is to say that we are born into a world in which we face competing visions of truth, competing accounts of who we are, why we're here. And we have to exercise critical judgment as to which of these is the best account. And that's why in mere Christianity, time and time again, Lewis is saying, look, it might be that, it might be that, it might be that. We've got to look at them. I think it's that because of these reasons, not just I feel better about this, but because there are good reasons that can be given. So I think what Lewis is saying is that it is very, very easy to be enslaved to a way of thinking. And we need to work out how we can prevent that. And also what we do to help those who have been enslaved by these worldviews.
So for Lewis, clearly belief in God was integral to discovering meaning. Is belief in God also necessary for discovering truth, in his opinion, then?
Well, Lewis would say, I think, that truth is a rich and complex idea. And in many ways, you know, if you're a sincere seeker after truth, Lewis will say, you know, sooner or later you're going to start thinking about God, because that's the way things are. But I think Lewis isn't quite making that simplistic equation. He is certainly saying that there are different notions of truth, and Lewis's own strong preference is for a concept of truth which is not something, again, we've invented, but rather something we've discovered that's built into the deep structures of universe that we discover, that we don't invent. And of course, you know, for Lewis, texts like Christ saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life are really quite significant, because they sum up this view that, first of all, in some ways, Christianity is answering each of those deep questions, you know, which way do we take? What is life really like? What is true? And these are all questions you have to ask. And what Lewis is really, I think, inviting us to do is to ask how we might explain these ideas to a culture that really isn't used to talking about them. I find when I'm talking to people about truth, they become a little bit nervous, because I think they know that their views are vulnerable, and I don't really want to talk about them very much. But certainly one of the things that Lewis really is saying is we've got to find ways of talking about truth, because if we don't talk about it, then what is not true is going to gain the ascendancy.
There's a quote that is used a lot. Christianity, if false, is of no importance. If true, is of infinite importance. What it can't be, the one thing it can't be, is moderately important. And I've interviewed various people who've been impacted by that quote. In fact, there was a scaffolder not long ago who I interviewed who came across it in an Alpha course and was so moved by the quote that he got it tattooed on his bicep the next day. And it was over the course of the next 4 or 5 days.
Big
biceps. I know, he's got very big biceps, he's very strong. But he, by looking at the quote and thinking about the quote, that basically was the means by which he came to Christianity, because he realised that it wasn't really important, it was a question of real importance.
I think that's right, and I think that this reinforces the point that Lewis is very quotable, he's very well religious. One of my favourite quotes from Lewis is that final sentence of the talk he gave in Oxford in 1945 called His Theology of Poetry. I believe in Christianity as I believe the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. And I know so many people, I know one, who in effect, that was a gateway. You suddenly had a bigger vision of what Christianity was all about, but also the sense that Christianity, by telling the truth, is able to let you see this rich landscape and enter it and find your place within it. So he's a very rich and imaginative thinker.
Right. So why does it matter then if Christianity is true? Why can't it just be moderately important and something we don't really think about? It's my truth, but it's not your truth.
I think we need to say that that very often people are not fully ready for the claim that Christianity is true. And very often you have to begin by saying that Christianity actually can make quite a big difference, or Christianity is very, very helpful in thinking about questions of meaning. And then at some point you gradually try to bring people to the point of realizing that the reason it is so good in generating meaning and significance and all these things is actually because it is true. So, I mean, it's a question of very often discernment as to when the best time to talk about truth is, but it's always going to be there. Not invention, discovery. In other words, something there that's real and that can be trusted. And the question really is, how do we, first of all, appropriate that for ourselves, but secondly, help people to make this journey of discovery, which may, for some people, be very, very quick, but for others may take quite a long time and have multiple stakes along the way.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
We often hear that science has made belief in God unnecessary, but has it? This month, we're offering an exclusive ebook titled Beyond the Cosmos: Physics, Philosophy, and the God Question, drawn from two compelling, unbelievable dialogues that explores cosmic fine-tuning, the limits of scientific explanation, the Kalam argument, reductionism, morality, and even questions about time and extraterrestrial life. It's thoughtful, rigorous, and refreshingly even-handed. When you give support to Premier Insight, we'll send you this ebook as our thank you. Visit premierinsight.org/CS Lewis to request your copy today. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
Alistair, one of the areas where Wycliffe's New Renaissance Project has been critically helpful is in engaging with the culture wars. And do check out the New Renaissance Project, by the way. I'll make sure on the podcast there are links to that so you can check it out. And what would Lewis, though, say about our culture wars? I mean, obviously, he was speaking in a very different context, but are there things that are applicable from what he was saying about how he engaged with the culture wars?
I think Lewis was very much aware of the culture wars of his own day. I mean, for example, the post-First World War situation here at Oxford was people were deeply cynical about truth because they'd seen what happened during the First World War. It was very, very difficult to defend truth then. Or again, Lewis dealing with materialism in the late 1930s where, you know, again, he just felt we have to say something, the question is how best we do it. What Lewis would say to us is that in addition to our commitment to there being a transcendent truth, we do need to think how we're going to explain this to people, how we're going to find ways of communicating this to people. Because for Lewis, very often, the problem is people do not see why it's so important. A lot of people say, well, look, the way I see things is fine. I'm quite happy with this. And Lewis is trying to say to us, you need, in effect, like a good physician to be able to say, look, there might be something wrong, something that needs to be healed. And this means you can't deny the way things are. You've got to find out what the real problem is and what can be done about it.
And a part of that is learning to engage with people who think very differently to us, isn't it? So how would Lewis recommend that we do that? He modelled that in his own life through the Socratic Club and various things that he was involved with. But what advice would he give us for engaging with people that do not see your eye to eye?
Well, Lewis didn't engage with a lot of people who didn't agree with them. E.M.W. Tillyard being a very good example. Also, Peter Medawar at Malden, who gave a Nobel Prize for medicine. Again, they would have some conversations about the relation of science and faith, which didn't really go very far, but nevertheless, Lewis was very happy to try and make them go somewhere. I think what Lewis would say to us, and this is, I think, comes out very, very clearly when you read his writings, he's constantly learning what people's objections are and how he could respond to them. So what I would say to anybody here who's thinking this through is, look, I know it can be quite threatening, I know it can be quite difficult, but actually, as you talk to them about faith, you will hear them articulating the questions they have, the difficulties they have, and you may not be able to solve these, but you will go away with a very good sense of what the questions are and motivation to think through, I want to know what I would say. Maybe next time I have that conversation, I'll know better what to say. And well, a lot of Lewis, you know, you see Lewis developing ideas through this process of interaction. I think that's very important for us, that very often we feel a bit nervous about having these conversations. It might be difficult or we might be able to answer questions properly, but Lewis, I think, encouraged us to see these interchanges as ways of clarifying what the questions really are and helping us to discover what we might be able to say, not necessarily there and then, but in the future, mm-hmm. as people ask these questions.
Well, I know some of the work that you've quoted in Why We Believe is his experiment in criticism, where he speaks about seeing with different eyes.
Well, that's right. One of Lewis's most interesting apologetic or evangelist techniques is to try seeing things from a Christian perspective. Now, Ruth here is talking about the late work, An Experiment in Criticism, written in 1961. And what Lewis is saying really is that we see through many eyes. And that enriches us. It doesn't necessarily mean everybody's right, but it means that you're able to see the world in multiple ways and try and ascertain which of them is the best. And of course, that's a very good description of how Lewis came to discover Christianity. But what Lewis is also implying, and this is very relevant to the point you've raised, is that if you talk to people, you begin to see the world through their eyes, and you can see there are blind spots. There are points where what they are seeing is inadequate, unhelpful, toxic. And you can say, in effect, something like this, well, look, that's very interesting. I'm a Christian, I would see that slightly differently. I would see it like this. Now, does that make any sense to you? In other words, your evangelistic approach is not so much, let me prove this right, but much more, try seeing it this way. It just makes sense. This actually seem rather better than the way of seeing things that you had at night. And again, you know, Christ in the parables, you know, if you think about the dynamic, it's seeing things in a new way, which is a right way.
Alistair, we've touched on objective truth, but one of the areas where Lewis really dives into in that abolition of man is also the idea of subjectivism, moral relativism, and clearly that's the context within which most of us swim in today. What would Lewis say about subjectivism and moral relativism?
Well, Lewis would recognise that subjectivism actually is quite important as a phenomenon. In other words, it's very often the way we feel about something, the way we would like things to be. And Lewis can recognise those as being responses that are certainly there, but for him they are dangerous, inadequate responses, because in effect we are locked into a world that we've created to deceive ourselves. Now Lewis and T.S. Eliot didn't get on very well. You may know that it's a very famous story about T.S. Eliot once being introduced in New York as C.S. Lewis. He didn't like that. But you think of T.S. Eliot's four quartets. Humankind cannot bear too much reality. And what Lewis is saying is that's absolutely right. And what we very often do is invent worldviews or invent stories to, in effect, try and distance ourselves from a reality we feel we cannot cope with. So Lewis's point is that sometimes we have to kind of just open the door and say that that's the way the world really is. We've got to face up to this. I think I can. Can you? I think one of the things that Lewis really is bringing home very, very clearly is that Christianity is totally realistic. It's realistic about human nature. Human beings are profoundly ambivalent things. We do bad things, we do good things, and yet human beings are doing these things. And Lewis is really saying we need a worldview which is totally realistic, which also brings hope, because in effect there's a bigger picture within which we can locate these things. So Lewis, I think, is helping us understand why these weird ideas arise. But his response is ultimately always, we need to put them in touch with truth. Even though Lewis is very, very good at developing a number of different ways of helping people find that truth.
So then how would he answer that perennial question, can we be good without God?
Well, I think Lewis would say several things, but I could mention two.
Okay.
Number one, very often we find ourselves longing to do good, and we don't do it. It's the Romans 7 dynamic, yeah. The good guy wants to do good, and yet instead, when I try to do that, I'm doing all these bad things. There's something about us which means that we may have good aspirations, but they go terribly, terribly wrong. And Lewis's point is that brings home to us the need for some deeper framework of understanding this, where you realise that, in effect, this recognition that we cannot be good on our own is almost like opening up a different way of thinking, which maybe there is someone who is able to help. And if so, I really do need that help. So if you like, the very fact of human failure can be a gateway to discovering the reality of God. But the other thing that Lewis would say, of course, is very clear, and that is that we cannot simply artificially distinguish and separate goodness and God. That in effect for Christianity, you know, goodness is grounded in God, because otherwise it's grounded in simply what some influential human beings say is good, but actually it is not so. And again, you know, if you look at that hideous strain for other things, you see again, Lewis often bringing out how very influential groups take control of society and say, this is good, whereas everybody knows perfectly well it's not, but it's influential and it takes control.
Yeah, there's a great quote in The Abolition of Man on that day where he says, the human mind has no more power of inventing a new value than of imagining a new primary colour, or indeed of creating a new sun and a new sky for it to move in. Speaking about, I guess, the danger of grounding our ethics, our morality in something like yours, at least mother truth, and all of that. And what do you think he would make of that, the modern concept of mastering our own destiny, being the person who steers our own ship for want and better?
Well, of course, that viewpoint was quite influential in the culture which Lewis is growing up. It's a very, very masculine culture. It's all about taking control of your own destiny. I am the master of my soul, that sort of thing. And Lewis's experience was that when he tried to do that, it all went very badly wrong. And of course, for Lewis, in effect, it is by discovering that there is something bigger and better than us, within which we can fit ourselves, that really brings that liberation and that fizz. So Lewis, I think, would recognise what you've described here very well. I think his answer has to be, you try to find gracious, winsome ways of challenging this idea that I can decide who I am and what I'm going to be, and it's always for the good. And Lewis saying, no, you might make a terrible misstep here. You need to think about this long and hard. And I think Lewis's own life story, I think, is very helpful here. And what I want to say is, I'm sure in this audience, there are life stories that might actually make some very important points along these lines.
That was Professor Alistair McGrath and I in front of a live audience at Wycliffe Hall in Oxford. Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos, and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.